meeting of the Camden Local Planning Panel. Before I start, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land that comprises the Camden Local Government area and pay my respects to elders both past and present. Today's meeting is being held by audio-visual link due to current health orders. Can I ask that everybody on the line remain on mute until I call your name, and then you come off mute, and then when you're finished giving a presentation to the panel, please go back on to mute. The other panel members for today's meeting are Michael File, Mary Lynn Taylor, and Steve Lyons. Before I call the first and only item, I'd like to explain a little bit about the meeting procedures for today's meeting. Our role is to determine the application that is on today's agenda. We will take into consideration the council officer's assessment report, the written objections, the oral submissions that we're about to hear, and all relevant planning controls. The meeting is being audio recorded in accordance with council's policy and will be published on the council's website. No other recording by video camera or any other electronic device capable of recording speech or still images is permitted without prior approval of the panel. Firstly, the panel will hear from the objectors that are listed to speak. Each objector will have 4 minutes to make a presentation to the panel. That time may be extended at the discretion of the panel. The applicant's representatives will have a total of 15 minutes to present to the panel. Panel members may then ask objectors and the applicant's representatives questions. After all questions have been asked, the panel will then adjourn into private session to discuss the panel's findings and formulate its decision. Before I call the first item, I need to ask all panel members whether there are any conflicts of interest that they need to declare in relation to this item.
No conflicts for me.
It's Michael File.
Steve, yeah, no conflicts from me either.
No conflicts. Mary Lynn Taylor.
Mary Lynn Taylor, I don't have a conflict. Thank you.
Thank you. And I don't have any conflict with that item. So the one and only item on today's agenda is an application to under Section 8.2 of the Environmental Planning Assessment Act to review an earlier decision of the panel to refuse an application for demolition of existing structures and construction of a two-storey mixed-use building at 19 Edward Street, Camden. The council officer's recommendation is to review the decision by approving the application subject to conditions. The first person I have listed to speak to the panel is Fletcher Joss. Is Fletcher Joss on the line? And would you like to speak to us, please?
That was a surprise. I didn't expect to be first. Can you hear me?
I can. Thank you.
Good. Let me know when you want me to start and I'll go.
Please. Yep.
Okay.
You can start when you're ready.
Okay. Thank you for allowing me to speak to you. I ask you to uphold the panel's decision of the 21st of March by rejecting this review application. The reasons for my request are lengthy, but I'll just restrain myself to 4 minutes. First of all, the application was not exhibited as required by the Camden Community Participation Plan. And you can see page 10 of the officer's report for the detail. This type of deferred request is not permitted by the LEC, as I understand it. It seems the LEC has determined that's Land Environment Court. Deferred commencement cannot be used to defer something which requires satisfaction of a precondition. The parking space is insufficient. The DCP requires rounding up. This gives a requirement of 10 spaces, not 9. The clause 4.6 variation request document reasons material unchanged. In fact, the text is exactly the same. And they're still inadequate. The only change to the document was the material related to the planning, not the reasons. According to the Land and Environment Court, the site's cottage is contributory, and its demolition requires a six-step evaluation. The required information is missing from the application. This proposal is largely for a box on stilts with an overly complex facade. Such a proposal is inconsistent with a conservation area statement of significance, in particular the sentence which says the juxtaposition of relatively clear floodplain with small-scale articulated nature of the town. This is not small-scale. The inconsistency violates most of the DCP 2.16 environmental heritage objectives and controls, especially 8 and 10. Therefore, I think the development is inconsistent with the objectives of Clause 5.10 of the LEP. I ask you not to accept the argument that all is okay because it cannot be seen. Apart from not being true, the concept is utterly foreign to the EPNA Act. Dwelling houses are permitted in the area. They are protected by the saving provision of the LEP and possibly the heritage incentives of the LEP. But in any case, the proposed amendments to the LEP foreshadow the reintroduction of the houses into the B4 zone. I ask you to note this type of commercial development has stopped in the area since the proclamation of the HCA in 2008. The constructed examples predate the HCA and there is yet to be construction despite recent approvals. Local rumours suggest no one will insure the builders against floods. This month the site was subject to an evacuation order because of flooding. The proposal is not permitted by all the numeric controls in the Camden Flood Risk Management Policy and is inconsistent with the New South Wales Government Floodplain Development Manual. If you look at page 5 of the manual, it states case-by-case decision-making cannot account for the cumulative impacts of flood behaviour and risks because by individual model works, this form of ad hoc assessment contravenes the principles of the manual. It's particularly interesting because of the planning circular PS21.6 raises questions about protection from prosecution in the event that there should be approval by breaching the principles of this manual. The circular allows the circular says these requirements are long-standing and therefore applicable to this application. There are still issues with the cafe's kitchen and waste management. Waste must still go through the eating areas, and the waste storage areas are not marked on the plans as required by Council Waste Management Guidelines on page 32. Finally, should you approve it, I'd ask that you consider changing the colour of the roof. The slate grey has a solar absorbance of 0.43, perhaps something which is low, say Surf Mix, which has a Surf Mist, that would be, has a solar absorbance of 0.32, would be better. That's all I've got to say. If you've got any questions, I can answer them. Otherwise, I'll go away. Thank you for listening for me.
Okay, thanks, Fletcher. Just stay on the line for a minute. Are there any questions from the panel members? No? No. Okay, well, I've got a couple of questions. I'm interested about the comment you make about the deferred commencement condition not being, or the...
Yeah, let me just get the detail that...
It was not being appropriate in these circumstances or not being available?
I've got a reference for you.
Yes.
What you need to look at is two court cases. One's Michael Brown Planning Services Proprietary Limited versus Windsor Caribbee Shire Council 2020. I think that's a New South Wales Court of Appeal 137, its reference number. And the Ballina Shire Council versus Palm Lake Works Proprietary Limited 2020, New South Wales Land and Environment Court reference 41. It's not a simple decision to read, but it would seem that if you need to be satisfied of some precondition, you can't defer it, but you need a lawyer to interpret it, not just draw attention.
Yep. Thank you. And second thing I'm interested in exploring with you is your comments about this building being a contributory item in the heritage conservation area and that there's a six-step process required. What documents, just firstly the question is, where is it identified as a contributory item?
If you look at the planning principles published by the Land and Environment Court, there's one called demolition of contributory items, and that's Hulu versus Strathfield Municipal Council 2008. 2006, the New South Wales Sec 66 is its reference. In that planning principle, as I understand it, I'm not a lawyer, so you have to get someone to interpret it, what the Land and Environment Court is saying, that anything which isn't a designated item is contributory by definition, and therefore has to be subject to a six-step evaluation process whether to determine whether it can be demolished. And that's all set out in that planning principle fairly clearly, I believe.
Right.
It doesn't say it can't be, it just says you have to do it, these steps. But it's not a judgment, as I understand it. It's a commissioner's decision, so it's not binding. But
You read that decision as meaning that every building in a heritage conservation area is a contributory item.
That's what I understand that decision means. But yes.
Okay. Right. That's all. Thanks very much, Fletcher.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next person I have to speak to us is Sue Cross. Is Sue Cross on the line or on mute?
Hi, I'm unmuted now.
Hello,
sorry.
Sue. Yep, we can hear you now.
Great, okay. Look, to start with, you just have to look at the properties in the street to see how lovely a cottage can look. If you look just next door at 21 Edward Street, it's right next door and it's beautiful, and that's a business. I just don't understand how council can state that the revised architectural design is considered to be generally supportable. What does that actually mean? It's impossible to understand how anyone can see how the design suits a street with so many lovely cottages. How the architect can even consider this strange design to be something suitable for a conservation area and within a street dominated by mid-20th century cottages is beyond belief. Just standing in the street, you can see how much it will present as glaringly wrong. I'm just appalled that council can think that this is somehow okay when they have previously stated that this could never happen in Edward Street. I'd also like to point out that I have spoken to the son of the owner of 17 Edward Street, which is the neighbour on the other side, and you haven't received an objection from her as she's elderly and still of the belief that neighbours look after each other. Her son hasn't been able to convince her that that isn't the case in this instance, and I'd appreciate you considering the impact on her property and livability, even though she has not voiced any objection, as she is still has the faith in neighbours and council. There's no reason for the existing cottage not to be renovated, and it could be just beautiful the way it is and just with a bit of renovation. Fabric of the conservation area logically and obviously should not be demolished. Reuse the cottage, don't destroy what is already here and in our beautiful streets. There is a 7 metre height limit. The rules are in place to protect the human scale of the town. I can't see why we can't abide by them. I object to a precedent being used to argue for the height exceedance. This is not allowed, as was confirmed by our mayor a few years ago. She stated that all applications will be decided on their own merits and not rely on precedents. And so why are there so many examples in council's report? Also, they are all irrelevant to this proposal when you consider each individually. 11 Argyle Street has stood idle for many years since the DA was controversially approved. Rumour has it he can't get any businesses to lease the spaces because the insurance is incredibly high because of the flooding issue, evidence from last week. 11 Mitchell Street CA was controversially approved and promptly sold and is still a vacant block of land. 16 Mitchell Street was built before the HCA was legislated, so it is irrelevant. 21 Elizabeth Street's overheight should never have been approved. However, at least the overall building doesn't look like a grey-brown anomaly like this proposal. 20 Elizabeth Street, although finally approved by the Environment Court, it is not supported by the community at all and is held up as an example of council's failure to uphold its own LEP and policies. 2-4 John Street and 11 Elizabeth Street is completely irrelevant as a special dispensation was given due to contamination of the site. Also, the community is now appalled by how it is turning out differently to what was originally supported. After last week's flooding, surely there will be a review of the flooding issues, and so shouldn't this application be denied until we have more information? I can confirm the site was inundated as I spoke to the current resident. Obviously, it didn't enter the main part of the house as it's built up high to avoid this very thing. Storage areas and garage were completely underwater. To end, I ask the panel to refuse this application and insist all rules are strictly adhered to. Otherwise, we will slowly lose what is now a lovely street with beautiful cottages and as well as a much, much valued heritage conservation area. Please don't let us down. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Sue. Are there any questions from the panel members? No? Okay, then. Right. Thanks very much, Sue.
Okay, thanks.
Next person I have on my list is Joe O'Brien.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Fantastic. Thank you for the opportunity to speak here at the local planning panel. I'm speaking today on behalf of Camden Historical Society. We do not support any approval of this proposal for 19 Edward Street. We question the merit of approving any proposal where all the necessary documentation is not yet completed, in this case, the stormwater plans. This is a highly unsuitable location for substantial commercial development, as was clearly evident only a week ago. The floodwaters of even a moderate flood are enough to force evacuation of the street, inundation of the entire site, and substantial loss of property. It is for this reason that this area has remained as it has for so long. This area was the original layout for the town of Camden until the frequent flooding saw the centre of town move to higher ground. It remained mostly undeveloped for a century until the cottage housing was built in the post-war era. These houses are part of the heritage of the entire conservation area and have value as a group, whether or not they be individually heritage listed. This section of Edward Street contains a particularly intact set with number 19 positioned in the middle. The issues that saw this proposal rejected previously by the local planning panel are only partly resolved with this new design. It is still over height, now at 24.5%. With any granting of an exemption, the integrity of this height limit is in danger. The objectives of the Heritage Conservation Area Zone and the objectives of the development standard are not met. Compliance with the Camden LEP is not unreasonable in this case. The development itself is not sympathetic to the heritage area. While some concessions have been made in terms of setbacks, colour, reduction of sign height and removal of some unsympathetic elements, the sheer size of this development renders it out of scale with the surrounding cottages. The proposed design would sit awkwardly in the area and would be clearly visible from surrounding streets and important heritage items, including the Pean House. While the frontage is said to present as one storey, the majority of the development is two storey, and the rear of the property is not subservient, as is characteristic of the area, which has large landscaped backyards presenting as a green spine for the block. The amount of landscaping proposed for this development is minimal. It is unclear how the addition of a perforated screen would do much to compensate for the overhanging suspended rear story. The attempt to maximise floor space and address heritage and flooding requirements has resulted in a compromised design with an odd mixture of gables, asymmetric elements, screens, materials and colours. It does not contribute positively to or complement the streetscape. We disagree with the statement that this locality is in midst of transition and is suitable for delivery of an infill commercial development of this nature. This area is part of the Camden Heritage Conservation Area, conservation being the key word. The houses in this block of Edward Street are cottages which may remain residential or adaptively reused for small businesses. This proposed development is not infill. There is a serviceable and contributory cottage in good condition on the site. There is no public interest in the approval of a private development which results in the destruction of a contributory element to the heritage conservation area. It is not generally consistent with other DCP controls. There is strong community support for the preservation of Camden and its heritage conservation area, which was established to protect the entire place, not just the individual heritage buildings. Its integrity relies on the preservation of existing buildings where possible and sympathetic new builds which clearly follow the set guidelines, including the 7 metre height limit. The mistakes of the past should not be repeated. We request that this second version of the proposal is rejected. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Joe. Any questions from the panel members? No? Okay then. Thanks very much, Joan.
Right. Thank you.
Next person on my list to speak is Glenda Davis on behalf of the Camden Residents Action Group. You there, Glenda?
Mr. Chair, this is Linda. Yes. Just advising Glenda was disconnected, but she is calling back in any okay. minute now. Thank you.
Right, we might come back to Glenda after we hear from the next speaker. The next speaker is Jim Davis.
Mr. Chairman, this is Jim Davis.
Hello, Jim.
I am the joint owner of three heritage-listed properties near the proposed development site, one being the Pean House, my family home, which is two doors down from the subject site, and the other two are 19th-century cottages at 7 and 9 Mitchell Street. I support the development controls that have been specifically put in place by Council to preserve the character of the heritage conservation area, and as such, I do not agree that the proposal in its current form complies with these controls. I also disagree that the concerns as expressed by the panel in its original determination have all been satisfied. I acknowledge that some improvements have been made and that the removal of the rooftop terraces and the changes to the first floor windows have addressed the loss of privacy to my property and others. However, I believe the amended proposal still presents significant non-compliances. It is of excessive height, having been increased from around 3.5% to 24.5% above the allowable limit. The amended 4.6 variation request is almost word for word the same as the request for the original design. No new evidence is provided in the amended request, and therefore it would be logical for it to be refused on the same ground. Much is made of the removal of the bulky proportion of the building at the rear of the site. However, the bulk of the amended design remains significantly greater than the surrounding cottages, with the extra height only adding to its visual impact. The claim in the applicant's statement of environmental effects that the proposed works will largely not be visible from heritage items in the vicinity is incorrect. I draw the panel's attention to the picture in my written submission, which shows that the new building will dominate the northern skyline from my backyard. The design has not altered enough to satisfy the planning controls that require it to be sympathetic to the streetscape. In fact, a comparison of the images of the refused design and the new design shows that there are many similarities. At first glance, it's hard to tell the difference. This is more fully addressed in my written submission, where a pictorial comparison is shown. Much is made of this part of the HCA being in a state of transition, and it is again referenced in the Council Agenda Report as a justification for departing the planning control. This is not the case, and Council's requirements for the HCA are clearly that it be preserved rather than be transitioned. This argument is rapidly becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy, but it should be ignored. Much is also made of the precedent being set by other overheight and bulky developments in the vicinity, both historical and approved for future use. All the existing overheight developments referenced in the Council Agenda Report were built before the current heritage planning controls were adopted and should not be used as justification for ignoring them. In particular, the old high school site was approved as a special case and was never meant to be used as a precedent, but it always is. It would seem improper to approve a non-compliant overheight design and then use that approval as justification for approving more non-compliant designs, but that is what is happening. Sadly, this is leading to a snowballing effect, and the area could indeed be transitioned, contrary to the provisions of the LEP, the CDP and the UDF. As one example, there are already plans drawn up for a large overheight three-storey development at number 6 Elizabeth Street, based on the current approvals where planning constraints have been overruled. This will only accelerate as more and more exceptions are granted. For these reasons, I request that the panel refuse the amended design.
Okay, thanks, Jim. Any questions from panel members?
No, thank you.
No, I've got a question there, Jim. I'm looking at that image that's in your objection where you've plotted the roof line of the proposed building. So that's figure three in your report, in your objection. So that's taken from your backyard, is it, that photo?
That's correct.
Yep. And the roof line is of the amended proposal?
That's correct.
And the garage or shed that I see there on the left-hand side of the picture with the tiled roof, is that on the development site or your...
Yes, it is. That's on number 19, Edward Street.
Number 19. Okay, so that's on the development site.
That's correct. And just to emphasise the scale, that building is 4 metres high. And, of course, it will be demolished.
The existing building is 4 metres high. The existing cottage. Yes.
The little building shed, with the tiled roof.
Yeah.
Yeah, the shed at the back. So it shows, it gives a comparison to the scale of the new building, the new proposal.
And those there's a large tree on the right-hand side. Is it your understanding that tree will be removed?
No, that building, that tree is on number 21 Edward Street. That's not affected.
Okay. And your, I'm just looking at the figure then that's above that, on the next page above at figure two with the red outlines, that the red outline shows your land holding there.
That's correct.
The house and the two cottages.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay, so your backyard, so your the Nepean house comprises three lots by the looks of things? Three separate titles? Yeah, okay.
Yep. And the picture was taken in the top left-hand corner of that red outline of Nepean house. You'll see a building there and it's taken standing next to that building to give you an idea of the impact on me.
Okay. You're talking about the shed that I see in the top left-hand corner of the Nepean house lot.
The light green roof there.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. And you can make out the tiled roof in number 19, sort of hidden under a tree there at the back of that lot.
Yes, I can see that. Yep. Okay then. Righto. That's all. That's all from me. Thanks, Jim. Thank you. And do we have Glenda on the line, back on the line?
Yes, you do.
Okay, Glenda. I'm here. Yep, can you tell us what your concerns are, please?
Sure, thank you. It's almost exactly a year later. I speak again on behalf of Camden Residents Action Group against this DA. We do acknowledge the changes to it. We note the removal of the raised walkway and third level rooftop garden that were grossly incompatible with the Heritage Conservation Area, and disregarded the rights of other properties, especially their privacy. We disagree with the assessment of this DA on a number of points. Given the time constraint, we focus on interpretation of the HCA listing and the cherry picking of the urban design framework. We submit that we know what we are talking about, having been closely involved over many years in providing input into Camden policy, including the heritage listing of the Camden Township. The agenda report does not seem to take account of the historical significance of the MacArthur town, that Camden Council has agreed in principle to investigating its state listing, and that the latest local strategic planning statement strongly reiterates the strategy of conservation of the town's rural and heritage identity and its contribution to tourism. In relation to the HCA listing, the agenda report describes the site as containing a post-war era cottage that is set amongst a group of similar post-war cottages. The town's heritage listing refers to important intact building stock to the mid-20th century, and the need to respect the significant qualities of the development of the town's original grid pattern. Edward Street is part of the 1836 grid, with its streetscape of mid-century cottages, is by definition significant in the history of the town. The cottage on the site, built between 1945 and 55, is by definition contributory. It is not within the province of anyone to simply assume that a cottage within a conservation area does not contribute. According to the six questions of the planning principle of the Land and Environment Court, already mentioned, demolition of 19 Edward Street is not permitted. The argument that because cottages in the street are not individually heritage listed, that any of them can be demolished is illogical and obviates the purpose of the listing of the conservation area. As is common, the cottage should be adaptively reused as expected by adoption of the borough charter into Camden's DCP. In relation to the urban design framework, we take exception to the cherry picking of some statements and ignoring of most of it. The DCP states that development within the B4 zone must be consistent with the framework. This development is not consistent with its spirit of conservation or its building principle of protection and enhancement of the unique character of Camden's heritage and its identity as a rural town. Architecturally, the proposed building is an extravagance of colours, textures, lines and shapes. To many eyes, these are not in harmony. Certainly, the design bears little, if any, relationship to the original building stock referred to in the HCA listing. Also, the agenda report provides no evidence for its statement that shale grey cladding, timber-bordered concrete cladding and brown flat-faced brick is reflective of the fabric and character of the conservation area. It simply isn't. As a group that is very familiar with the town, we state categorically that these are not sympathetic design features and are clearly not traditional in the building stock up to the mid-20th century, including the streetscape of Edward Street. The community is cynical and is awake up to this common developer strategy with its end game of gaining approval for what is better but remains non-compliant with legislation and policy. The piecemeal approach to demolition of the fabric of the HCA and replacement with generic modern constructions will result in its unconscionable loss. This is not Camden Council policy as written and certainly not as understood by the community. We do sincerely request that this DA again be refused. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Glenda. Any questions from the panel members? No, I've got a couple of questions, Glenda.
Sure.
Are you saying that there are some recommendations of the Urban Design Framework study that haven't been referred to in the council report, council officer's report?
Absolutely, yes.
And what are they?
Particularly the building principle, the built place principle for the conservation area.
Okay.
Which requires that be sympathetic and to enhance the rural and heritage character of the town.
And in relation to the whether or not this cottage is a contributory item to the heritage conservation area, your view, or at least the Residents Action Group's view, is that all cottages are contributory to the HCA?
Within the grid pattern, if they were built up to probably mid-20th century, certainly they are. They're actually mentioned in the HCA listing. The DCP also refers to cottage-dominated streets, and Edward Street is certainly one of those.
Yeah.
Is that they must... It's not should be preserved, it must be preserved.
And so what...
It's definitely part of the character of the town. It's what makes it a country town. Yep.
Can you give me an example of what wouldn't be a contributory item in that HCA?
Yes, corner of Mitchell Street and John Street. There's a red brick ranch-style building, I think a a much older property was demolished to put it there. It doesn't, is not sympathetic with anything else in the heritage conservation area. Corner of Mitchell and John. Yeah, that we have recommended that be demolished and that a parking area be put there instead, perhaps.
Right.
It doesn't enhance the town at all. No, there's a few items around that were approved in that 60s and 70s era that really don't contribute to the conservation area.
Okay, then. Righto, thanks very much.
So these cottages in Edward Street, it's our opinion, they certainly do contribute. They are part, an integral part of the heritage conservation area. They tell a story.
Okay, then. Mm. I understand. Okay, thank you, Glenda.
Thank you.
Next person I have on my list is David Nethercoat.
Hello?
Yes, David.
Wait,
go ahead, please.
Good. Thank you for the opportunity to address the panel. There is a certain repetitive quality about objections to troubling DAs in the Camden area because the DAs themselves repeat the same problems, oversize, overheight and overdeveloped. This DA is of such a type. Properties bound within the heritage conservation area are limited in the extent to which they may be altered, changed or rebuilt. Naturally, this affects the purchase price. These limits are well known and spring from a sense of general well-being for the community. They are an important part of the whole and make Camden a desirable place to live and work. The HCA has been in existence since 2010 and is no novelty. Furthermore, these limits have been made more explicit in the local environment plan and reconfirmed in the urban design framework of 2019. These limits are neither whimsical nor arbitrary. They aim to preserve and enrich the environment by spelling out in some detail what is acceptable and what is not. What is not acceptable is to buy a dwelling within the HCA with its clear limits as to style, height and bulk, then propose an unacceptable design in style, height and bulk and expect it to be approved. Often developers will ignore these constraints and hope the omission is overlooked. Some take the bull by the horns and address these matters in a heritage impact statement. Here the technique is to minimise the impact or even with bold audacity claim the new design will enhance the environment. For those nearby, this method is perhaps the most galling of all. The HIS offered for 19 Edward Street has a little of both. What is offered is not a statement, it is an assertion without any argument. Comments are offered claiming any variation sought are within acceptable limits, with only passing recognition of those very limits. Camden deserves better than that. We find ourselves in a familiar conundrum. The aspiring development cannot be satisfactorily constructed within the current legislation. There are two alternatives: change the design or change the legislation. This DA seeks the latter course. You cannot buy an ox and expect it to behave like a sports car. Its purpose is otherwise. The HCA and other rules are long-standing and were clear at the time of purchase. They are also viewed by the community as insurance against unbridled and unchecked development to maintain a cherished and loved area. Claiming an exception as a precedent will effectively undermine the very values and design that Camden has maintained from its earliest days. It is what makes it a desirable place to live and work. It is what marks Camden as a point of difference. An intrusive and dissonant construction like this disrupts that point of difference, and it is on that very point that this DA must be rejected. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, David. Any questions from panel members? No. Okay, then that that's the group for against speaking against the recommendation. I now have Jeremy Swan and Joseph Mamone for representatives for the applicant. Now, I'm not sure whether who is going to speak first, but and I'm happy for either of you to speak first, but could you start by just addressing some of the points that have been raised by the people speaking against the recommendation? And then the panel members may have some questions for you. We've got Jeremy and sure. Joseph.
Yep. Yeah, sure. So this is Jeremy Swan speaking. So with me is Joseph Mamone, the architect, but I'll do most of the talking, but Joseph's yep. available if we've got questions. Okay.
Yep.
So in listening to the objectors speak and also having read council officers' report, firstly, just to acknowledge that we obviously support the recommendation being put forward by council officers. And the two, I guess, key issues that we see being put forward by the residents relate to flooding and heritage, and I'll deal with both of those. So in respect of flooding, I guess the first point I would make is that we've obviously worked very hard with council officers to get the application to a point where they now support the application based on flooding reasons. As part of the assessment of the application, council actually engaged Cardino, who are expert flooding engineers, to effectively do a peer review of the application on their behalf, which we then we paid. We didn't have any contact with Cardino. It was all through council. So they were extremely independent in their assessment. What I would say is that, and this is picked up in the officer's report at the bottom of page 19, the flood report, again, the flood report being undertaken by council's own independent expert, demonstrates that there will be no change in flood levels on surrounding roads and properties, except for minor decreases of up to 0.015 mil in flood levels on 17 Edward Street, Camden. So what that's effectively saying is that there is no negative impact. In fact, there's actually a positive impact as a result of the proposed development on adjoining properties. So that's the first point that I wanted to make. The second point, obviously, is that the application has been designed in accordance with council's flood controls. We have a commercial development. So right now, the existing building is residential in use. So as part of this development, the residential use will be lost, which is a positive outcome for both the zoning and the flood-related controls. Secondly, proposed use, as I said, is commercial in nature, and therefore that is something that I guess fits neatly with the flood controls, and in particular the first floor level is raised above the 1% level. Secondly, I guess in respect of flooding, the issue of flooding has been also dealt with on a number of applications within the Camden Town Centre and under the existing planning controls. And those include 11 Mitchell Street, which was determined by the local planning panel about 2 years ago. And more recently, in a Land Environment Court case called Graham and Sanders versus Camden Council, where the application in 20 Elizabeth Street was approved by the commissioner, which in turn takes me then to the heritage aspects of the development. So it's important to note that from our perspective, we have always believed that demolition of the existing building is appropriate, and it's actually consistent with the Graham and Sanders versus Camden Council decision by the Land Environment Court last year. That is important in the sense that the 20 Elizabeth Street property had a building of similar age and similar characteristics to that is currently on our subject site. And I'm going to read out the judgment about the assessment of the 20 Elizabeth Street, and it's almost identical to the assessment that would be that is carried out of the existing building on site today of our site, which is, it's a modest and undistinguished example of a post-war house of no discernible style and with no features of note, and could only be classified as a non-contributory item in the Camden Heritage Conservation Area, and there are no heritage issues that would preclude demolition of the building. So unlike other local government areas, particularly, for example, City of Sydney, where their heritage conservation area categorises buildings either contributory, neutral or detracting, this heritage conservation area does not do that. And a merit assessment is the appropriate assessment to be undertaken to determine whether demolition is appropriate. We have always formed the opinion that what is deemed acceptable is simply that you've got to do an assessment of what is actually being proposed to replace it, and determine whether that is an acceptable outcome. And in this regard, very early on in the assessment and then through the 8.2 review process, we engaged James Phillips from Weir Phillips Heritage and Planning. Now, he's not available today, unfortunately, because he's in the Land Environment Court, but I'd like to read out, I guess, a summary of his position in respect of why he believes, from a heritage perspective, the development application and the 8.2 review is acceptable. So the proposed works will have an acceptable impact on the historic, aesthetic, rarity and technical significance of the neighbouring items or conservation area. The revised design more sympathetically addresses the historical context. The revised principal building form takes its architectural cues from the surrounding area and adopts more traditional architectural styles. The single-storey brick gable has been designed with this in mind, ensuring the proportions of the ground floor and entry points maintain consistency with the existing streetscape character of the adjoining post-war housing development. The proposal is consistent with the scale of other commercial developments within the immediate vicinity. The proposal is thus consistent with the developing character of the setting of the heritage conservation area. The proposed amendments will reduce the overall scale of the building, including the rear setback, which will work to retain significant view corridors to and from the item. So I guess that's our position from a heritage perspective. The third issue that I just wanted to briefly talk about was the clause 4.6 and cite, I guess, some of the more recent examples of approvals with variations using clause 4.6. In particular, the matter that I briefly mentioned at 20 Elizabeth Street, which is the Graham and Sanders versus Camden Council matter. This was a development application that presents as a two-storey with pitched roof building at the street. It is actually higher in height terms than what we are proposing. The height variation in that matter was in the order of over 4 metres. We're proposing a height variation of 1.72 metres. And I think there's a good diagram in the officer's report that identifies the height exceedance, which is effectively the portions of the pitched roof that extend out beyond the 7 metres. So the building and the let's call it the gutter lines are all within the height limit. There's no floor space sitting above the height limit. It's simply the pitched roof nature of the building, which has been done to complement the heritage conservation area. And that goes to the clause 4.6 discussion, which is what are the planning reasons? The planning reasons in support of the clause 4.6 are twofold. One is that the height breach is as a result of, adopting a pitched roof character consistent with the heritage conservation area, which is a better outcome than adopting a flat roof design, which we would never want to do, which would actually comply with the height limit. The second thing from a planning perspective that I guess is determining the overall height of the building is the flood consideration. And the flood consideration is that the first floor has been adopted above the 1% flood. If we were able to lower the first floor, we would, but in consultation with council and to ensure that the development met the flood controls, the height obviously is what it is. It's not inconsistent with any approval recently within the Camden Town Centre where a similar approach has been adopted. And again, I would cite the Graham and Sanders matter where, again, the Commissioner determined that the clause 4.6 in that instance was well founded. And the planning reasons why are not dissimilar to our case. And then finally, from an objective perspective, the issues raised today, I haven't heard any discussion about, impacts on adjoining properties by virtue of solar access or privacy. All of the issues that were raised previously have been resolved. And from our perspective, and I'm speaking on behalf of both myself and the architect and James Phillips from Heritage, that we believe this is an application that is worthy of support. We're able to take questions.
Okay, thanks, Jeremy. Any questions from the panel members? No questions? I've got a couple of questions. I appreciate you're not a flood engineer, but is it your understanding that the flood controls that apply to this site allow commercial floor space below the flood level?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. They do. Yeah, because you're proposing this one. You're proposing a portion of floor space below that 1% flood level.
Correct. Yeah. And that's consistent as well with both 11 Mitchell Street and 20 Elizabeth Street. They both had floor space, commercial floor space, below the at ground level, below the flood level.
Hmm. And I want to explore this this difference of opinion about whether this building is a contributory item to the Heritage Conservation Area, because you've heard the objectors say yep. that it is. However, there's no document that, as I understand it, there's no document such as a development control plan that identifies contributory and neutral and non-contributory items as you've mentioned other DCPs, and I've seen them as well. They go to that level of detail. So what would your definition be of a contributory and a non-contributory item in this HCA?
So I guess each site needs to be assessed on its own merits, mm-hmm. Firstly. And then the second part of it is you need to look at, the age of the building and whether it contributes to, the character of the area. And I guess you've also got to look at its use. I think that's principally how I would go about doing it. But I think from a technical heritage perspective, I think the real question is, looking at the way Graham and Sanders approached it in that matter is, I guess, it's almost identical to the situation that we have right now. If you compare what the existing building on 20 Elizabeth Street and you compare it to 19 Edward Street, it's almost identical in its form and age. And I guess it's, lack of architectural features is what I would say. And in that matter, as I said, it effectively came to the conclusion that at best it was described as, and I'm just bringing up the matter case again.
You said modest. In undistinguished building, non-contributory item.
Yep, correct.
Yeah.
I'll get you the paragraph from that case. Bear with me. It's in paragraph 36. In brackets 2, in brackets B,
right,
for the judgment.
Okay. And the name of the case is Sanders.
Yep. So it's Graham and Sanders Proprietary Limited versus Camden Council, and it's 2021 New South Wales LEC 1433.
Okay. So what, applying that definition, that would appear to be a fairly low threshold for items to be non-contributory, because you could, look at the building there at 20 Elizabeth Street and say a lot of other cottages in that area that weren't heritage items, they would also be non-contributory. Say, for example, the cottages next door to this property at Edward Street, 19 Edward Street, that row of cottages through there, you'd say that they were also non-contributory?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'd say, yeah.
Okay, then. Any other questions from the council, from the panel members that have just might have arisen from that discussion?
Yeah, I've probably got one, Michael. I'd just like to ask Jeremy, how does he feel it doesn't have impact on the whole of the streetscape, whereas if you look from Mitchell Street all the way north to the car yard on the corner, they're all a single row of single-storey cottages. These structures going to be... quite different from that. The streetscape is certainly going to be affected, I think.
It was very difficult to hear you, but from what I understand you're saying is that you were comparing it to the Mitchell Street streetscape.
Just that Edward Street's still just one row of single-storey post-war cottages for the entire length of the street from Mitchell Street down towards the Hardwick. So this would be the only development on that side of the street so far. So it'd have to have some sort of significant impact on the streetscape of that whole area of the street, I'd think.
Look, I guess what I would say is that that's why we've, set the second story element back so that when you read it in the street, immediately in the street, it's still got that single story character, but then you see obviously a two-story built form sitting behind it, which is not dissimilar to, you know, other developments as you go further down Edward Street towards the main road.
Back towards Argyle Street.
Yeah. Which is main. And then main I guess... Yeah. Yeah, so... I'm just going to Street View just so I can... So you can see in Edward Street, if you just go, I guess, a little bit further beyond Mitchell, you've got the DNR stock feeds. It's got a two-storey built form effectively on not set back at all, on the street. On the opposite side of the road, you've got a two-storey built form, which is where the old, you know, livestock and Hindmarch property building is. Again, that's two stories. And then you keep going. There's even the livestock selling centre has a two-storey element set back. And then as you keep going along Edward Street back towards the roundabout, you actually start to get even more two-storey built form. So I would say that Edward Street isn't just single story. It's a mixture of single story and two story. It's not dissimilar to the approach that was taken with 20 Elizabeth Street, where exactly the same scenario, you've got a mixture of single story and two story built form, depending on what side of the road you are. If you look at 20 Elizabeth Street, on either side of 20 Elizabeth Street is single story, yet the court approved a two-story built form with attic. So you could almost argue that that's three stories because it's got a higher pitch and an attic space with a height variation of in the order of 4 metres. So, I mean, I would say that it's a mixture. And the planning controls, I guess, and I mean, I was the consultant employed by council to actually undertake the urban design framework from a town planning perspective. And it was always envisaged that a two-storey built form within the town centre was an appropriate built form. And it's a balancing exercise then as to the height of that two-storey built form having regard to flooding and heritage. And that's the approach that we've taken.
Yeah, okay, thanks, Jeremy. If you designed that design, urban design framework, a couple of the people that spoke today talked about the six-step evaluation. Could you maybe explain that to us?
So the six-step evaluation that was referred to by the objectors was not from the urban design framework, but it was taken from a planning principle that they cited, which is Hallou versus Strathfield Council, which is a case from 2005 that the commissioner determined that involved the demolition of a building within a conservation area in Strathfield, and determined that it was a contributory item. So that's the six-step process that they're talking about. It's simply a planning principle in the Land Environment Court.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions from panel members? No. Okay, Jeremy. Well, thanks for attending and giving us your views and answering questions.
Thank you.
I'll now close the public part of this meeting. As I said earlier on, we will now adjourn in private to discuss our findings and to formulate our determination. The minutes of today's meeting will be made available on the council's website. I'm thinking within 48 hours, but I'm not sure about that. The council officers might have to correct me on that, but they will be.
You're correct, Chair. It's 48 hours.
48 hours.
Correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
So yeah, our minutes will be available on the council's website within 48 hours, and the notice of determination that flows from that will be issued by council officers in due course. So thank you everybody for attending, and I'll now formally close the public part of this meeting. Thank you very much.